Hello, welcome to Books in the Biz, a podcast that looks at both the financial and operational sides of success. Please welcome our hosts, Dan Paulson and Richard Veltre. Dan is the CEO of Envision Development International, and he works with leaders to increase sales and profits through great cultures with solid operations. Rich is CEO of the Veltre Group and a financial strategist working with companies to manage their money more effectively. Now on.
Welcome back to Books in the Biz 2025 edition. Rich, how are you?
I'm good, Dan. How are you?
I am good. Are you all rested up from your Christmas and New Year's activities? Did you party too much? Did you have too much champagne?
I'm kind of glad they're over.
I think a lot of people are, especially when they fall in the middle of the week, because let's face it, nothing gets done for 2 to 3 weeks. It's bad enough when it's on a weekend, you know, because you only usually lose the week in between Christmas and New Year's. But I think when it's falls on a Wednesday, it's like, well, nobody wants to work Monday and Tuesday, and then nobody wants to work after Christmas, and then nobody wants to work before New Year's. And then after New Year's, you know, again, you got 2 days left and it's pretty well shut.
They might be there, but they're not really there.
They're not there. I found that out the hard way in some cases. But Well, welcome back. This is our first episode of the new year. So 25 is off to a banging start. I was, you know, since I couldn't talk with people because they didn't want to talk to me anyway, you know, I was listening to the news and I thought, well, for the first part of the year, one thing that's going around a lot is this whole H-1B visa thing. I'm like, I actually have some experience with that. And I think, you know, you might too, or at least have some knowledge of it. But maybe to just kind of let people know, I've got the article here. Let's see if I can pull something up, share the screen, show you what I'm talking about. And of course, our good friend Elon Musk, you know, he's like the pseudo president of the United States. I think he's been very vocal since Trump has been elected. And anyway, you know, a couple weeks ago, the subject of H-1B visas came up. Yeah. And what was interesting is it seemed to piss off everybody. So when you brought the subject up, it wasn't like the left was happy or the right was happy. It's like nobody was happy and for all sorts of different reasons, with the exception of a handful of people. What's your familiarity with the H-1B visas?
Just out of curiosity. I don't actually have a lot of.
Okay.
Because a lot of my work was not tech related, which is, I think, where you really run into it the most. You know, I was a little surprised at, you know, Trump's comment that he has them on his properties. And I'm like, well, doing what? Like, how does that fit? Because I know what an H-1B visa is.
Yes.
And I know what he owns as far as his properties. So I'm not sure who he's using an H-1B visa for.
Well,
or if maybe he's not quite right about which one he's using.
So here's been my experience with it. For those who aren't familiar with H-1Bs, because as you said, it tends to be more popular in tech or I would say advanced science degrees like engineering and whatnot. And that's really where I've had some experience with it. But an H-1B visa basically allows somebody from another country to work within the U.S. legally, provided they have this visa. And at one point, there were only so many visas released per year. I think they've loosened that up quite a bit. That pretty much, if you have the right credentialing, you can use these visas. And for the most part, I think the idea behind it is right, because we have a lot of people from other countries, whether it be China or Europe or Asia, India, that tend to come here to learn in our universities. And what are the things they're learning? They're learning science-based degrees. As you point out, engineering, IT, programming, all that type of stuff. But here's the funny part about a lot of government programs. Basically, the way a H-1B visa works means that as a U.S. company, you could not find somebody of similar caliber with similar experience in the U.S. that could perform that job at the going rate. So this is where it gets funky. So the argument that came through that a lot of people are pushing back with Elon and Vivek Ramaswamy was also one bringing this up was people are using this to kind of cut the line and hire people at a lower rate. Now, again, the gray area is you're supposed to be hiring somebody you can't fill the position with locally, and they're supposed to be paid the prevailing wage of that position, even though they are not from this country. It's written into the visa or to the law or however you want to look at it. One thing that I saw online that pointed out that was a really good point is the visa is tied to the company that brings that employee in. So it's not servitude, but if you want to keep your visa, you kind of have to be good, because if you're not good, they can cancel the visa and ship you back home. So if you really want to be here, you might put up with some things that other people who are U.S.-based maybe wouldn't put up with. You might put up with maybe more difficult work hours. You might put up with maybe a much lower salary, even though that salary is supposed to be competitive with what somebody in the U.S. would be making. It's also not just tied to things like IT, engineering, and whatnot. It can really be anything that, you know, would require somebody with, you know, the similar level of experience where they can't fill that position. So you pointed out Trump. Where could Trump gain on this? I don't know if it would be hiring landscapers, but it could be hiring a hotel manager. It could be hiring a facility person. There's a number of ways, and it's all on how you write to that visa. And if it gets approved, you're good. So that's kind of what I see. And I think that's what makes the H-1B visa more difficult than just giving it a check mark to pass.
Yeah, I was a little surprised by the comment that he had made. I guess for the reason of in the beginning, I thought he was one of the ones who kind of was looking to squash the program. Now he's all proponent for it. So I'm not really sure what the motivation is for that. But I think on top of that, you know, we say it's a hotel manager, but I guess the question becomes, what's the real push for using someone overseas to bring them here to allow them to work? I think it's for a set term. I don't think it's forever, right?
It's not forever, but it can be renewed.
Okay.
I'm not sure about the length of time, but I believe 2 to 3 years kind of sticks in my head.
Okay.
And then you would have to go through a renewal process.
Yeah, I thought it was monthly or 6 months or something like that. But if it's a couple of years, I could see that that could be something like in that industry might work. But, you know, I can understand the tech side, right? You bring somebody in, they bring a certain knowledge base, you get something done, you know, and the person goes back, right? And then maybe you can bring them back again the next time you have another project because it's a certain amount of time. If it's renewable and you can get a couple of years out of it, okay. But, you know, you and I are always talking about, you know, building culture and having longevity. And, you know, how do you do that when you're outsourcing still? I mean,
yeah,
this was the problem that, you know, to me, it's you're still outsourcing. It's just you've got a legal right to bring the person here and then you're going to send them back.
Yep.
So it's not an American push. It's not a U.S. push. It's, you know, I'm bringing someone with knowledge from overseas. So here's kind of my take on it is I don't necessarily want to say it's bad and I'm going to be against it, but I'm looking at it and I'm saying if the goal here is to rebuild the United States, if the goal here is to make America great again, right? The whole MAGA movement, you know, we're not setting anything up for long term. So, you know, are we setting something up for short term that we can use cheaper labor? That's always the argument, right?
Yep.
But you're doing it anyway. Because either you're outsourcing the project to somebody over in India, which is where everything seems to be going as far as tech goes,
yeah,
right? And now you're just saying, well, let's just bring India here.
Right.
Well, either way, it's the same thing. It doesn't do anything for America other than, yes, we're a tech great because we have Indian people working here.
We've imported all the help, right?
Yeah, we've just brought them in. So I'm a little confused. Like, I'm a little confused for the argument, but I understand why there's this kind of argument back and forth for both sides.
Yeah. I just looked it up quick. So we were both wrong. You were somewhat right in that you got the number right. You just didn't get the length of time right. So okay. It's not 6 months, it's 6 years. So H-1B visa can be good for up to 6 years.
Okay. And how often do they have to renew that? Is it it's renewable, so it's...
I'd have to do some more research on that, but
usually
what happened, at least my experience with that, it's very similar to a student visa. There are student visas where, again, you have engineering, you have IT experience, and you've graduated from here. You can get that visa to basically extend your time in the U.S. Mm-hmm. Usually within that last year of eligibility, you have to start the process to renew that visa before it expires. Because if it expires, you have to go back to your country of origin and basically start the process from scratch.
Okay.
Again. I was working with an engineering firm. They were having some hiring difficulties. And actually through one of the resources we had where we were looking for, you know, somebody to fill this key role, we weren't finding anyone locally with the experience, but we had found somebody who did have a visa. That visa needed to be transferred because, like I said, it's tied to the company that you're working with. So there's a lengthy legal process that also goes to transferring that visa over to a new business. It was not a cheap endeavor to start with. As if you talk to anyone who's tried to get naturalized or get a long-term green card into the U.S. come in the right way, it can take several years. I have two family members that have significant others that came from overseas, and it was a very lengthy and expensive way to do it. The H-1B visa tends to be a little less expensive, but there's still a lot of legal costs involved. What I've also heard with some of the online chatter going back and forth is not only do they use it to get cheaper help, but it also ends up in a situation where you don't always get the same quality. In talking IT, for example, there's a number of people who have said, you know, we outsourced part of our department to India, or we brought over these people that had, you know, had an H-1B visa, they would fill key roles, and they would find themselves having to rewrite code that they did because there were several errors in the code. So Vivek made the argument, and to some degree, Elon made the argument too, that, well, we don't have the experience here. It takes too long to teach people here, and nobody wants to work here anyway. So we can get somebody from India or Asia who's very industrious, wants to work really hard, and will do the job. But it sounds like the job they do isn't always as good as somebody here. So again, we're kind of in a situation where I don't think there's any perfect outcome.
Yeah,
I know we've talked in the past that to some degree we're going to have to rely on help outside the U.S., you know, either through immigration or whatnot to fill positions in the future, because I really don't think we have the people here to do it.
Yeah.
At the same point, you know, we can't tell like people in coal miners in Kentucky or wherever, hey, you got to learn how to code, and then not provide them with any resources to do it. So to me, the other part of the failure here is we're not taking the time to invest in our current workforce to fill key positions that we need. And, you know, we've talked about this before, too, and you can, I'm sure, elaborate on it, too, is, you know, the push to go to college is great, but when you're going to college for basically anything, you're not necessarily going to get a degree in something that's going to get you a good paying job or a job that's needed.
Right. You know, it's interesting because in my head right now, as we're having this conversation, I'm paralleling it to the fact that, you know, right now, everyone is trying to outsource bookkeeping level accounting overseas. And now even audit work at the accounting, you know, in accounting firms, big accounting firms are opening offices in India. You know, they're opening literally accounting buildings you know, they're going all in on putting people in India into these, you know, processes. Now, you can't tell me it's because we don't have enough people in the U.S., you know.
But do we have enough accountants in the U.S.?
Well, I mean, there is a shortage, right? There's definitely a known kind of shortage of what they're trying to accomplish. Now, they're not curing the problem here. They're just working around it, you know? So they're going overseas. They're going to get a whole bunch of people and say, okay, now you're all auditors, and they're all going to do the work over there for companies that are here.
Mm.
So, you know, essentially all you've done is figured out a way to make it global, to take it, you know, right, overseas. But your motivation is not to do anything in the U.S. Your motivation is not to fix the problem. Your motivation is keep the cost down, right?
Yeah, because what's the cost difference between the accountant doing it here versus the accountant doing it in India? It's probably, one-fourth?
It's significantly different, yes.
It's a lot. One-fourth,
that might actually work. A quarter of the rate? Yeah, probably. It probably could work. You know, at least the numbers can work. I don't know that I like that that operation, but, you know, because I think you hit on it before. The information that comes back, okay, the thing I've heard from other companies who have outsourced, forget the big companies doing the audit thing, right? That's a totally different animal than the small business support that I deal with every day. The smaller business basically is looking for quality. Okay. And the biggest thing that comes back from the outsources, they're all happy that they paid less money because it went overseas. But when the work comes back, they all are complaining because the quality's not there.
Yep.
So that's not the solution. And I think I'm getting us off task here, but you know, that's sort of or off topic, but that's sort of what I see is the problem here. That why are we still looking at the how do we take it overseas to get it cheaper, and then we get a bad quality, we turn around and say, well, we got bad quality. Yep. Well, I mean, you got what you paid for, right? I mean, that's what it comes down to. So I don't necessarily feel for anybody who's sitting there saying, well, we can't get the people here, so we're going to go over there. But then they don't start anything. They don't start any kind of training. They don't start something that in 3, 4, 5 years, all of a sudden the trend goes the other way. It still comes down to we needed it cheaper.
Right.
You know,
and I think you see that more in some areas, less in others. I know that, you know, I do quite a bit of work in the trades. There is a strong push now from a lot of construction companies, plumbers, electricians, that type of thing, to really work locally with the even middle schools and grade schools in some cases to start getting these kids interested in doing something other than, you know, maybe engineering or social studies or something like that, showing them other opportunities where they can make a good living and do something maybe that's going to interest them more than just going to college and getting a degree for whatever purpose. You know, you really didn't get off subject because all we're doing with an H-1B visa is we're outsourcing the work overseas, but we're bringing overseas here.
Yeah.
So it's kind of the same result. We're not going and building a building in India, but we're bringing maybe some Indian, maybe some Philippines, maybe some Chinese, wherever. We're bringing them over here to do work. And I work in, you know, we live close to a big tourist town. And for years, that tourist town, I don't think these were H-1B visas. These were temporary situations. They worked with a separate company that would go to, I would say, Eastern Bloc European countries and bring them over for filling wait positions, hotels, facilities, you know, things like that, because there weren't enough high school and college kids to fill all the open slots. And that was a big push, you know, for many years. And then, of course, COVID kind of shut it down. And to some degree, some of the uprising over in Ukraine and whatnot has shut things down as well.
Mm-hmm.
But still, we're always going to be outsourcing people.
Right.
The question is, what do we need to do to get the quality up? And I think that's where, you know, you and I, as we go forward on this XCXO thing, is really trying to find the quality here to train up, to fill that gap, hopefully a little bit quicker than, you know, starting at middle school to bring these kids in to learn various aspects of business that they're not going to get necessarily through college.
Yeah, I think that's where my key argument comes down to. I said it before, I'm not against the H-1B if it's truly being used the way that I think it's being or I want it to be used. You know, if you're truly telling me that we can't get the quality or we can't get the people here, then mm-hmm. bring the person in, that's fine. But I think somewhere along the line, there has to be the sort of switch that says, you know, training has to be here. There has to be, you can't tell me that every virtual assistant has to come from the Philippines. You can't tell me, I mean, you just can't. Nobody here can be a virtual assistant, you know?
Exactly.
I mean, as it is, I keep getting these ads for, now I can't remember the company name, but somebody's come out with a way to take your schedule and actually become almost your virtual assistant. It's like, mm-hmm. you know, AI generated virtual assistant. So
yep.
these are the types of tasks that, you know, there's going to be somebody who can use this AI to do the work. So are you telling me there's no one in America that can learn how to use this software to become your virtual assistant? It has to be someone overseas. You know, the only reason you can tell me that it has to be someone overseas is because they're going to take $4 an hour.
That right there is probably the biggest issue.
So there's my problem. Okay. Yep. That doesn't solve anything. That just kind of switches where the problem was. You're right. Telling me the problem is we don't have enough tech people, and then you're going to create tech people with these other people. And then there's a hole of nobody doing the lower level, and you're still got to outsource.
Right.
You still got to offshore or off, you know, however, you still got to take it overseas.
Yeah.
So, you know, from a short-term vision, I understand it. From a long-term vision, I don't understand it. I think from a long-term vision, there really has to be someone who steps up and says, here's how we're solving this problem over time, you know? And I don't know, maybe it's political and 4 years isn't enough, right? Like 4 years, you can't get anything done and somebody changes it on you 4 years from now. But let's not make it a political issue, okay? Take it out of that, you know, and make it, this is American business. This is American, you know, ingenuity, technology, any industry you want to call it, you know, this is how we cure that industry.
Yeah, we definitely need to bring it back home and I do agree with you. I think the H-1B visa, with all good intents, can fill short-term gaps to provide solutions. Personal experience, again, a lot of the people that are coming in on those H-1B visas fill a price point, don't necessarily fill an experience point. So while they can do the job, can they do the job at the quality that we need to do it? Probably not. We're still going to need some oversight. You're going to need experience to make sure things are working out, and you might find out that you actually have more experienced people over here. But you know, the difference might be paying somebody $100 an hour versus $30 to $40 an hour. Are you willing to do that? You know, some people look at the bottom line and say, "Well, this saves me money; it makes sense for me to do that." But ultimately, there's a cost somewhere else, especially if you have to do a lot of reworking. To me, reworking is just insane. Try to get it done right the first time. Or done mostly right and make a couple tweaks. Don't get it done, then have to go halfway back and start all over again and fix the problem that you created. And I think that's going to be the hardest part for a lot of these companies, because when they start looking at, you know, I can save two-thirds of the cost and I don't have to worry about some 20, 30-something that thinks he's going to be CEO of the company and he wants to work from home and he only wants to put in 20 hours a week. Those are all issues that I think we're going to have to work through. It's going to take a little bit from each side. So, you know, employees, you can't have your cake and eat it too all the time. I think you have to do some split to get the experience that you need. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't think getting rid of H-1B visas makes sense. But at the same point, becoming fully reliant on that, especially in areas of tech where we really need to develop more of an onshore workforce versus exporting it from overseas, probably needs to be done.
I agree.
Well, that has been an exciting discussion. I hope somebody gets something out of it. We got a new commercial. Did you see it?
I did. It's awesome. I've been sending it around saying everybody's got to take a look at this.
Woo-hoo! Well, I actually have it on here. This is going to be our exit from now on. Nice. We're going to show this commercial. And so this is for XCXO. And for those of you who don't know, Rich and I have been working on a process to hopefully tap into some key experienced people that you can have for a fraction of the cost. But it's not that you're necessarily paying them less. It's that you're only using them for the time that you need them. So we're thinking a lot of cases for many companies, 10 to 20 hours a week is plenty, especially if you have the staff on board to handle the what I would call the heavy lifting. Because as you and I have talked, when you're at kind of a C-level position, what you're looking for is somebody who's more of a visionary to get projects moving and to get things on track, build a culture in the organization or extend the culture that you're trying to create. That's really what this position is for. And there's a lot of businesses that can't afford to pay somebody, you know, upwards of $200,000 plus benefits and incentives for working 40 hours a week when there may not be 40 hours worth of work there for them to do.
Right.
So that's where XCXO comes in. Before I show this video, because I'm going to just let it go out and they'll ride off in the sunset, how do they get a hold of you, Rich?
Rich@xcxo.net. Send me an email and we'll go from there.
There you go. And for me, it's Dan@xcxo.net. And now the sort of premiere, I guess the premiere on our podcast of our XCXO.
Want to boost your sales and profits, but need the talent to help you grow? XCXO is a one-of-a-kind platform to find skilled fractional executives to help develop your team into a high-performance powerhouse. Fractional leadership is a great choice when you consider the average executive-level candidate can cost you hundreds of thousands of dollars in salaries, benefits, and incentives. XCXO finds you the executive and utilizes their talents to build your team's experience, all for a fraction of the cost of a full-time C-suite leader. Contact XCXO today to fill the gaps in your leadership team. Visit xcxo.net.
There we go. That was awesome. So we've got xcxo.net. Be sure to visit that. Be sure to check out our other podcasts, and we will be catching up to you again next week. So thanks again, Rich.
Thank you, sir.
You bet. We will talk to you soon.
All right.